Welcome to the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America with Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett. Take it away, boys.
Hello once again, everybody. Welcome to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews with you, and we're going to have a great show coming your way. So thank you so much for being with us. We'll, of course, talk about what's happening in the world of golf. We used to just say the PGA Tour, but you know, there's another tour. Well, there's always been a few other tours. There's one in particular that gets a lot of attention now. So yeah, we'll keep you updated on LIV Golf and what's happening there and what's maybe not happening with LIV Golf. We'll explain a little bit more what I mean when we talk with our guest. That's Bob Herrig with SI.com. He's also authored a new book about Tiger Woods that we'll talk to him about. And Bob has been covering golf, golf writer for decades. So very good time for you to sit tight and listen to what Bob has to say, because he's really on the inside of a lot of the things that are happening in the world of golf, not just PGA Tour. So we'll talk to Bob here in just a minute. In the meantime, Frank Bassett, as always, in the Nashville studios. How you doing, Frank? And how are things going with your temporary housing situation since the tornado a few months ago?
They're going great. I love this house we're in. It's absolutely beautiful. We're considering buying it now. So, but just don't know. Anyway, everything's great.
Good.
It's going along perfectly. Nothing's happening at the construction site, which is the way it goes with that sort of thing, you know.
Yes.
It's kind of like it's kind of.
Do you
like
go by there? Do you go by your old house quite a bit?
Every day.
Oh, you do?
It's kind of like playing golf on it. Should I say this way? I better be careful.
I don't know.
It's kind of like being backed up on the – you go to the course, and you're backed up after the third tee, and you wait two groups for every shot. That's kind of the way I feel right now.
Really?
With that house, yeah. Oh, it's, you know, this – I have a general contractor, but you have all the subs and, well, it's raining, or we can't make it, or, you know, daddy got a bad pork chop. I don't know. You know, it's just, there's all sorts of excuses, but it's all good. And we're chugging along watching a little golf. I have to tell you, that Livy Tour, Livy, Live Golf. The tournament was pretty damn good last week.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. And, I was flipping back and forth, and I had some people over. And they said, let's go back to the LIV Golf thing. That's really more fun to watch. I went, I know.
I mean, it used to be people just kind of thought, no. But it was like the bastard tour, right?
Yeah.
It's like,
those guys are there.
And nobody cares.
That Greg Norman. Well, he's a bad man, you know.
And there are a bunch of old has-beens and everything. Well, now you go,
No,
there's some really, really good golfers there. Not only guys, John Rahm in their prime, but some good young golfers that maybe you don't know so much about, but and the environment around it. I have had a lot of people still say, does anybody go? Is there any, like, attendance? Is there any kind? And I go, yeah, watch it one time. You'll see people all over the place. You'll see great hospitality tents set up like you would everywhere else at a major golf tournament.
Let me tell you, the hospitality there is fabulous.
Yeah.
Fabulous. And the team there, the media team is really good at LIV Golf. They're very hospitable. They
said, really?
What can I do
actually
for you?
Appreciate
How can
you being
I help
there, huh?
you? Yeah. they came and gave me a couple of dozen golf balls, Titleist Pro V1s with the LIV logo on them.
Wow. You thought you were going to faint, didn't you?
Yeah. And here's a couple of hats. You need any more? What you, shirt? You know, go pick out a couple of shirts. I'm like, really?
Wow.
Really? At the PGA Tour, it's like, all right, hands behind the back.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. Walk this way. Turn that. Turn left.
And you've got like, and you have inside the ropes and all sorts of credentials that like we have. And it's like, do you belong in here? Are you supposed to be here?
The truth is,
no, it says Jesus Christ on my badge. What do you think? You know, come on, people. It's very different.
Used to be credentialed. And I know a lot of the regular people, regular non-media people, oftentimes would be like, you know, who cares? And I get it. Whatever business you're in, access to things, okay, that's part of your business. Part of the business of golf media is you have access to being around players and coaches and swing guys and everything else.
On the range.
Except for now, it's like it's become last few years, PGA Tour. You don't have many things that are different than a regular guy who bought a ticket to stand there and watch practice range.
No,
your access is not much different.
A guy who bought a ticket can take his camera and take pictures. We can't. We are not allowed to do that, remember?
No, there's all the rules.
All sorts of trouble. I posted something on social media at the Players' Championship one year. They had a meltdown. They made me go take it down. You can't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's because of their relationship with, I guess, the different photographers and NBC Sports or CBS Sports or whatever they've signed away for. Who knows? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Too many rules.
And in all honesty, I don't want to blame everything on the PGA Tour hierarchy, if you will. But the players have become much different too, right? Players don't want so much access. Players want somebody to stop everybody, including media, from. They just want to focus because they got their own
media.
They got their own little team going now, right? They got nine guys around them when they're hitting balls. When it used to be, you could walk up and talk to a golfer anytime you wanted to and shoot the crap and do it. Now you got to get through the circle of marketing and swing guys and everything else. So yeah,
At the live event, the last live event I went to, I'm just standing there talking to somebody else, and all of a sudden somebody taps me on the shoulder and says, "Hey, Frank, how you doing, man?" Sticks his hand out, and it was Sergio. I'm like, really? This is happening here? It's very different. And, you know, I'm not hammering the PGA Tour, don't get me wrong. Excuse me. But it's quite different at live. They're welcoming.
And well, by the way, just to let you know that their next event is right here. I mean, tomorrow, as we're doing the podcast, they're in Hong Kong, starting March 8th through the 10th at Hong Kong Golf Club. Say that real fast, Hong Kong Golf Club, which looks like a really cool golf club. I've never been there, but I've seen the pictures. Yeah. It looks like a beautiful. Which is another part of, you know, you watch a lot of events, and we're of course on the PGA Tour, Arnold Palmer Invitational, big event. Nice, sweet, and everything. But it's been at Bay Hill for 100 years.
Yeah, we've seen it a million times. You know.
Now you watch Live Golf, you see a lot of courses and a lot of parts of the world that you don't really see very often, if at all. So it's that part of it is what
fun.
Some golfers have brought out, saying, well, we can be a more global because you have a week in between. You're not football, baseball, you're not playing every day. You got to travel so much. You might travel once every few weeks, a couple weeks. So if you have to go to Hong Kong and then a few weeks you go to Mexico and a few weeks after you go to the US. Okay. You can probably get that in your schedule and you get to really not only see that part and bring people through golf to it, but experience the local people that also want to, you know, how many fans in Hong Kong have gotten to see Bryson DeChambeau? I'm guessing none. Right. So they kind of now go, wow. And that's why the crowds turn out. Cause you're like, well, we're going to places where they appreciate golf. They just never get it. From a professional standpoint.
Yeah. It's totally different. A lot of fun. And again, I'm not hammering the PGA Tour. It's just it's funny how we've gotten very you talk about inclusion. Non-inclusive.
Exclusion.
And that's and the media is partly at fault here, or halfway or maybe more, because of all the negative things that they've spewed out on some of these players. And so if I were Phil Mickelson, why in the heck would I want to walk up and talk to Alex Maselli?
And I get that. I mean, being a lifelong media guy, I get that. But that's always been the case is, you know, we as a general media, whether TV, radio, whatever it might be, podcasters, is, you know, we try to tell our story, right, whatever it might be. And it might not always be flattering because it doesn't always deserve to be flattering, right? Some athletes do wrong things or they just play poorly. Well, a lot of athletes don't like to hear any negative. I don't want to hear that I made three bogeys in the last four. Okay, but you did, so we're going to talk about it. And so that's always been a conflict with, you know, you are the bad guy and don't – well, okay. And I get there are, to the extreme – stories that are written that make everybody scratch their head going, what's that even about? Did you just hate the guy? Like, do you not like his attire? You like his wife pissed you off one time or something? So some of it seems more personal and you're like, what the heck? But if it's just the fact that I'm telling a story that isn't always ultra flattering because again, you didn't play necessarily well, or you might've blown a champion, you know, Greg Norman himself had to deal with a lot of that, right? How many times did he get reminded of tournaments he hadn't in his pocket and then lost them?
He wasn't a big fan of the media. At all.
But
although he was so cordial to me when I was met him down in Miami at the tournament. I mean, I'd already met him before, but I went up, said, "Hey, Greg, I'm Frank." He said, "Oh, you are? Yeah, I talked to Elk and yada yada and old friends," and he was very welcoming and very cordial. And that's something we're going to talk to Bob about today too, because there's been a lot of things that have gone down with Live Golf this week. You know, big news the past 2 weeks, although the AK deal, you know, with Anthony Kim coming back to Live Golf, he didn't do so well, and he didn't really talk about the past at all. He hasn't had a lot of media exposure for some reason. I'd like to know what that's all about, and also about what's going on with the official world golf rankings. And Greg Norman said, okay, boys, you know, we're forget about it. We're not going to worry about that anymore.
Well, and we'll talk to Bob about this as well, because Bob actually wrote and in si.com, which everybody should get the app and get it on your phone, and you can get an update every day.
Absolutely.
They talked about that the British Open is trying to create new avenues, if you will, for people to qualify for British Open.
Yeah.
And that is a direct, while they didn't say we're trying to get more live guys in, everybody certainly interpreted that way to say, all right, now if only three guys from live tour are going to be able to make it to the British Open, well, that's not right. You know, there's probably 12 guys that deserve to be here. If you want the best guys in the world, we got to figure out a different way. If the world golf ranking isn't going to work, how can we get these guys to qualify and to play at British Open? Because it's good for them. And British Open even said, we're not either tour, and we're not anti-live, pro-live, or anybody else.
Yeah.
We're the British Open, just like all these other tournaments are saying. I don't care how you boys work it out, but we want the best golfers at our event at Bay Hill or wherever it might be.
The Masters can do that. It's an invitational. They can do anything they want to do. And now with the Open Championship, British Open, aka British Open, doing what they're doing, now the USGA probably needs to loosen that top button on their button-down start shirts and say, okay, we need to make some changes here too. We talk about inclusion all the time, except when it comes to golf.
Well, and again, we've got to figure out a way. Everybody wants to see the best golfers. And I think that goes for Live Tour and PGA Tour. I think they do. Of course, lawyers get involved and people spit and moan at each other. And then it gets a little ugly sometimes in the boardroom. But somehow or another, you've got to figure this out so that we can. As I said to you, the last show we did, I think, when's the last time a lot of people saw Bryson DeChambeau?
Well, they're going to see him this week.
Caught everybody's imagination, right? Everybody loved the guy for, two or three years back 4 years ago. But we sure, unless you watch a lot of live golf and you have to CW and, all the chances of maybe not being able to do that, you miss out on seeing a guy who's very compelling, who's exciting, who's dramatic, all those things. Well, and Kepka, what happened? I don't know. Where are they? So that's why
Full Swing,
you got to figure it out.
Second season of Full Swing's out on Netflix. I watched the first two episodes last night.
Yeah, was it good?
It was really good. It's really good. I really don't want to watch it real fast, only because I'll have to wait another year, like I did last time. I just binged it for a day and a day and a half, and then I was
It is a bit addictive. It's a bit addictive.
Very, yes.
Right? I mean, because you want to see the next show, what's Kepka started saying something, he stopped, then he ended this episode. You got to go to the next one to see what Kepka meant.
Just for our listeners out there with young children and our wives in the room, F-bombs dropped a lot. So get
not
ready.
Not for golfers, Frank?
Really? Golfers. Can you imagine?
I can't. I don't know. Arnie's turning over. Not supposed to cuss when you're playing golf.
Yeah, well, I didn't get that memo. So there.
All right. Let's take a quick break. As we said, notorious writer Bob Herrick is going to be joining us. And he says it like he means it, and that's what I appreciate whenever I read him. He says, okay, here's what's happening, and he tells it like I think he really sees it, and that's what we love to hear. So you're going to be anxious to stick around and listen to what he has to say. So we'll take a quick break and come back, and Bob will join us. Frank and I will be back. You're listening to Golf Talk America, and we'll return right after this.
Is hiring challenging? Yes. Do you love a challenge? Also yes. You need a hiring partner that can help you rise to that challenge. You need Indeed. Indeed is the hiring platform where you can attract, interview, and hire all in one place. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. We streamline hiring with powerful tools that find you matched candidates. With Instant Match, over 80% of employers get quality candidates whose resume on Indeed matches their job description the moment they sponsor a job, according to Indeed Data US. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because the candidates you invite to apply are three times more likely to apply to your job than candidates who only see it in search, according to US Indeed data. We get you one step closer to the hire by immediately matching you with quality candidates. I can tell you, folks, I use Indeed and have over and over again in my past businesses. Works perfectly. My wife is the head of HR for a major corporation, which has to go unnamed right now. But I can tell you this. She's used Indeed over and over again, and she absolutely raves about it. Told me about it far before they ever became a sponsor of Golf Talk America. So, join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast.
Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/golfer. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/golfer. That's G-O-L-F-E-R. Just go to Indeed.com/golfer and support the show by saying you heard about it on this podcast. Indeed.com/golfer. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to Golf Talk America. Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett coming back with you. And as we said, we've got a lot of things to discuss in golf in general. And that can mean any tour that we choose to talk about. And oftentimes it's either the PGA Tour or what's going on in LIV Golf, or sometimes the two of them trying to come together. And nobody knows more about the world of golf in general, and certainly those topics, than our guest, Bob Herrig, writer for SI.com. Also has a book coming out that we'll talk about shortly, Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods. And we'll let you know how you can get your own copy of that very shortly. But Bob joins us now. Bob, thanks so much for being with us. How are you doing today?
I'm good, guys. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Good morning, Bob. How is the weather down in Central Florida today? Is it nice?
It's pretty nice today, yeah. And it's supposed to get hot on Saturday, like near 90.
Wow.
And then crazy on I think it's supposed to rain or really have like kind of a cold front overnight, and then going to cool off pretty drastically Sunday. And I think that means going into Players Week, we'll have a couple of cool days next week at the Players Championship.
Which is how that tournament was meant to be played. And with the
it was
the North Wind, yeah. And cool. Yeah, that's how Pete set it up. Wanted it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Meant to be played in cool kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, not meant to be played in the May temperatures that, you know, we saw for all those years.
And all those low scores they had, yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
I have a good friend, and you know him too, Steve Elkington, who won it twice, and he always points out, said, Frank, I won it twice, both times in March. Just as a footnote, and that's very true. It's a much more difficult course in March than it is in May. But anyway, we're glad to have you, man, and thank you for coming on. There are so many things going on right now in the world of golf. We thought it couldn't get more complicated. And then things started happening last week or this week with LIV and Greg Norman's and his memo to the players, and wanted to get your read on that in regard to the official world golf rankings. And LIV now saying, we're not worried about it. We don't need it. We're going to do our own thing.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. It was a little surprising to me that they would close that door. Because there's no guarantee that they're going to ever get direct spots into the majors. I think it's a little naive to think that the same people who are telling you that your tour's format doesn't work for OWGR is going to be fine to give you direct spots into the majors. The majors are the ones on the board who denied their bid. And yet you're going to go to the same people and ask them to give you direct spots, which I just don't see happening. The majors have not really done that with other tours to much degree outside of the PGA Tour. There's, you know, very small access, direct access, you know, to the Open and the U.S. Open via the other tours. The DP World Tour gets spots in the British Open. But, I mean, the Masters and the PGA are very PGA Tour specific. So, and the other thing was, is they didn't update their bid. Their bid had been denied in October, and they didn't submit a new one. And the OWGR, no matter where you fall on whether or not you think they're, you know, they're viable or not, or whether you agree with their decision, they did make a decision that was, you don't comply. So it was sort of on LIV to at least try to make some changes, and they haven't. And, you know, I've been saying and writing, this two sides should have just got in a room and hashed it out. Everybody recognizes that there's players on LIV who are world-class players. Not all, but a lot, several, at least 10, 12, 15, we can argue, that deserve some recognition. And you weren't going to be climbing the rankings exponentially playing LIV. But, you know, Joaquin Niemann's two wins on LIV have gotten him 0 points.
Oh, I know.
How many points would they have gotten him? I mean, they should have probably gotten him something. They mean something. And so they needed to figure it out. And now they're not going to do that. And, you know, the game remains as divided as ever.
If that's the case, Bob, and again, we're talking with Bob Herrig, writer with SI.com. If that's the case, and you're right, they could have made adjustments, and Greg Norman and LIV Golf could have. Is that still in a thought? Somebody, I'm guessing, has thought of that other than you and me and Frank, that they have to play four rounds, that they have to have more turnover. The things that the World Golf Ranking people said, here are the problems we have to make some of those adjustments. It doesn't seem like it's outlandish to make some of the adjustments, at least try to meet them halfway. Is Norman just putting his foot in the sand, quite figuratively and literally, and saying, I'm not going to budge from this? It seems kind of ridiculous. Why not at least make some movement?
Yeah, I mean, the four rounds thing, I don't think is even a deal breaker. I mean, OWGR has said they can work around 54 holes. They can work around no cuts. In fact, the OWGR at the end of the year came out with a new edict where no cut events see the bottom 15% of the field not get points. So that takes care of that. You know, like at these, now this event this week, signature event has a cut, but when they play the Heritage in a few weeks, that won't have a cut, but the bottom 15% of that field won't get points. You could do the same thing for LIV. It takes care of the no cut issue and world ranking points. But the turnover thing was a problem. That's what they pointed out. So if you're LIV, why not just, add more players to your fields and have more relegation and more promotion? Instead of having only four players come on, three through the promotions event and one through the international series. Well, why don't you give three to the international series and four or five to the promotions event and have eight players come on? Now, yeah, you're going to have to maybe push down eight players. Well, if you have more players, then there needs to, the problem is there needs to be risk. There's no risk with the contracted players, right, or very little risk. And then obviously there's no turnover week to week. The same 54 guys that are in Hong Kong this week are going to be in Miami in a few weeks, and unless there's an injury or an illness. And that just doesn't fly with, the OWGR and field strengths and things like that. Now, is it a huge deal? Like, if you just had a little bit of turnover, that's where if I were LIV, I would have called their bluff. I would have added I would have come out with a plan this spring, saying in 2025, we are going to do this with our promotions event, and we're going to do this with our fields from week to week. And then if OWGR is denying them, it's on OWGR. They're really kind of splitting hairs at that point. And it's like, we can then again go back to the idea that a LIV event is probably going to get less than half the points of a PGA Tour event, just based on its field size and their strength of field. So, okay, let them play for that. A guy who dominates is going to do well. A guy who finishes 8th or 10th every week is not going to do very well in the OWGR.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, a lot of sense. Well,
yeah.
They didn't ask me, Frank.
They didn't call us
or asking you, by God.
By golly. Hey, they just slammed the door in their face, and that's just not the way to endear yourself to those guys, for sure. So,
hey, Bob, you mentioned that this week you're at the Arnold Palmer Invitational in Bay Hill, in the Orlando area,
yes,
and for this event, and it is a signature event, and it is a no-cut event. Two questions here. Have the signature events worked the way everybody expected them to, and is everybody happy with the kind of all or nothing, and the big glories are going to be playing for a lot more money, and the whole signature event theory? And why are some cuts and some no-cuts? Because it seems to me the cut-no-cut thing has been slowly diminishing. And Frank and I talk about this all the time, and even though I'm an older guy, I'm a little bit maybe newer in thinking in some of these. I'm like, if I have a cut event and I'm a tournament promoter or anybody that's sponsoring I have an issue if some of these big-name guys and Scheffler and Spieth and Rory and whoever may not make a cut, and I don't get them on the weekend, which is the big money time and turnover and sell beers and everything else. I kind of want them to be there for all 4 days. I want to see the superstars in the NBA playing both halves, not just one half of a game. So why are some signature cut and some are no cut? It's the second part of that question.
Well, the second part is easy enough. What happened was, there's eight signature events. And what happened was guys like Tiger and Jack fought back a little bit to have cuts at their events. So what they decided to do was have a cut at the what you would call the legacy events, Tiger, Arnold, and Jack. Now, the problem is that what they should have done with, for these tournaments is at least these tournaments used to have 120 player fields. They should at least have 100 and then have a cut to 50 in ties or 60 in ties or whatever. They're keeping with the same field size, which is to keep it to less than 80. And they have a 50 player cut and ties plus anyone within 10 of the lead. So this tournament has only 69 players. Right. It could possibly be that every player makes the cut. Now, you know, there was a lot of controversy over going to no cuts at all, because that's exactly what LIV does. And that was the same thing that the tour was criticizing. Right. You know, all their events don't have cuts. Well, now you go to 8 events with no cuts. The whole idea of these tournaments was to funnel money to the top guys. It was meant to reward the top players with it's basically guaranteed money. Aside from these 3 events, it's guaranteed money. You know you're going to get paid because there's a smaller field and there's no cuts. $4 million to the winner. I mean, you know, at the events that don't have a cut, I think you're guaranteed $50,000, $60,000, $70,000. So this is a result of LIV. This is, you know, the tour felt, you know, the players felt, hey, to keep guys from going, well, why do we have to risk it every single week? Now, have they worked? I thought they worked pretty well last year. We had really, they were called designated events last year. They were pretty compelling. I mean, you know, Rahm won Riviera. Scheffler won at Phoenix, which was a designated event last year. This year, it's been kind of weird. They haven't really been that compelling. It's just been a strange year for the tour so far. We've had one top 50 in the world player win, and that was Wyndham Clark at Pebble Beach. And the only other, you know, maybe you would call star player was Hideki, who won the at Riviera. But Hideki was outside of the top 50 at the time. You know, we've just sort of been on this run of you know, it's – there's this saying, you know, would you rather have good stories or stars? And we've had a lot of good stories, you know, an amateur winning, you know, a Pavan, a DP World Tour player only in his third PG Tour event winning,
unbelievable.
You know, but we've not had the stars winning so far. And the idea was for the stars to emerge, and that has not happened. And, you know, it would be kind of nice if it did this week. We kind of need Scheffler and Spieth and Ricky and Cantlay up there and fighting it out on Sunday.
I can assure you that NBC feels the same way this week.
Yeah,
I mean, sure. Tim's from the broadcast.
No,
Tim's an old CBS guy.
You know, so the whole reason that this was done was to sort of try to get this to happen more often. We want to see the stars playing together more often. And, you know, it's the reason why we've got this debate going on in the game. I mean, I think we want to see Rahm and Rory go head to head more often than just in the majors. And so, you know, the whole idea of, well, how does the game come back together, and trying to figure that out, that how that can happen and what needs to be done is not an easy issue to figure out.
Bob, I'm a bit curious too here. And a cynic might ask the question or say, just like in any other sport, we all follow all kinds of sports, in baseball and basketball, football, that when a guy gets his big contract, that's when you oftentimes see his stats diminish, right? Now all of a sudden I've got my security. I've got my – would a cynic say the same thing about these signature events, and now the big money is being funneled to these guys and they're getting a different sense about, all right, I don't maybe subliminally have to work as hard because I've got my money, whereas the young bucks who are trying to get that money and also trying to get to the next level of playing in the signature events and getting to that level – are the ones that are succeeding under that. Is a cynic right when he says that, or is that just me?
No, it's, I think there's some truth to that. I mean, golf has always prided itself on, you have to, you know, you make what you earn, you know, you got to make the cut, to get paid. There's sort of a romantic side to that, you know, these guys aren't assured anything. And that's changed a little bit more. I would also argue though that it's a commercial entertainment industry also. And there's no other sport where the star players are not assured of pay. I mean, Steph Curry's getting paid the same whether he goes 0 for 20 or 19 for 20. And the guy, you know, a guy coming off the bench on the other team who outplays him and is making the NBA minimum doesn't get paid more just because he played better than Steph Curry. That's sort of the way it works in pro sports. And in golf, while yes, you do get what you earn, which is great, the idea that a guy, I've used this so many times, this idea that Tiger could sell all the pre-tournament tickets, he could sell all the hospitality if they knew he was coming. You know, the networks knew the ratings were going to go up if he was there, all the hype around him playing. But on Thursday morning, on the first tee, the guy who's 150th in the world and nobody knows who he is, who's in the same tournament, is assured the same amount of money as Tiger. Zero. And if Tiger misses the cut, he's there for 3 or 4 days. Of course, Tiger very rarely missed the cut in the prime of his career, which is sort of another, you know, impressive feat about him. He never got complacent. But the bottom line is Tiger was assured nothing. And yet he was part of the show. And I think there needed to be some adjustment. That's pretty much what Phil was talking about for all those years.
Yeah,
that
definitely.
Why don't we have fewer tournaments, funnel more money to the stars? Why are we subsidizing the players who do not sell tickets? Now, that sounds harsh, but that was sort of the mindset. That was sort of the live mindset. You know, if they had their way, they'd have the top 50 players in the world playing every single week. It would be all stars. And that was sort of the goal, or to get as many of them as possible. And so anyway, I think that's the answer to what you're getting to there. You know, there are two sides of that.
Yeah, I think, you know, to that point, I really believe there may be another gold rush coming now, that some of the things that have come to pass between the PGA Tour and the PIF, or LIV Golf, if you will, it's been kind of too quiet maybe on that front, and I don't know what you're hearing out there, but, you know, we had a rumor one day that Victor Hovland was going to make the jump, and then they squashed it very quickly. I just feel like something's going on. There are some sharks swimming below the water, so to speak. Haha, didn't mean to.
Well, the longer there's no deal, the more that's going to be, you know, speculated about or possible. Yeah. I mean, I don't sense anybody jumping this year because LIV's field is full, and I don't see them making changes. But, you know, they clearly, you know, threw down the gauntlet when they went and signed Rahm, Mronk, and Hatton.
Yeah.
You know, then the tour brought on SSG as a private equity partner, you know, with up to $3 billion coming in. And, you know, there's murmurs, well, we don't need the PIF.
Yeah.
And I keep saying, and I've been writing and saying all along, both sides take a huge risk if there's no deal. On the tour side, if there's no deal with the PIF, if they decide they want to do it, they can just double down and keep trying to bring guys over there, keep trying to sign players. And you can't argue the fact that the tour scene itself diluted a little bit. I mean, to not have Rahm, Koepka, DeChambeau, and Cam Smith in the Players Championship next week is not great.
No.
You know, I mean, that's supposed to be the best tournament outside the majors, and those guys won't be there. Now, on the LIV side, if you don't get a deal with the tour and get what I would call, you know, that would give them an acceptance in the greater golf world, it's going to always be hard for them to get a proper TV deal. There's a stigma still attached, and people don't want to like advertise or sponsor with them because they're afraid they're going to annoy the PGA Tour. And it's going to be hard for them to sell their teams. Because who's going to want to buy a team if you don't get the proper exposure and you're not looped into the bigger world of golf? You know, if they had those teams and had only 10 events, but they were somehow part of the system, I think now you're going to sell those teams. Maybe somebody's going to want to own them and pay $100 million for them. Well, that's a revenue source for LIV. And I don't see that happening otherwise, or at least going to be very difficult to. So, you know, I think there's risk for both sides to not make a deal. And, you know, for fans, I think it's important. You know, I mean, what's SSG going to do for the PGA Tour enterprises? What is going to, how is that going to help the fans? The players are going to get equity in what? What's it going to make? How is it going to make money? So that's a, you know, these are all huge questions that we just don't have answers to right now.
No, it's going to be an interesting boardroom meeting, the first meeting when they sit down and say, okay, we've invested this much money. What's our ROI? And when can we expect
right.
it? And that's coming. That Arthur Blank is not a philanthropist 100%, yeah. you know. He's a businessman. So
yeah.
I don't know. It sure did shore up PGA Tour superstores a little bit, though, didn't it?
I suppose, yeah. I mean, it definitely helps their overall business for sure. And you've seen some people now, you know, want to get involved, like LeBron James, you
yeah.
know, and I mean, look, you know, I'm not saying it won't be good, but we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And all we're hearing so far is how the players are going to be enriched. How's it going to help the game?
Yeah.
You know, those are the next questions.
It's a valid question too, because it's got to play some kind of role in it, because it is still comes down to who buys the tickets, who buys the products, and who puts the money in the pockets of the players and the sponsors and whatnot. So again, we're talking with Bob Herrick, writer with SI.com, but also has written a book, Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tigray Woods. And that's got to be a fascinating. Tell us a little bit, if you could, Bob, about why you wanted to write this book. Did you get the access you wanted? I'm assuming this is a lot of inside with Tiger or whatnot. Did he openly want to talk to you? Did he not? How did that all play out?
Well, Tiger's not one to cooperate with book authors. Not that that's a bad thing. I mean, you know, there was plenty of people to talk to. I've been around for all of his major wins. There's plenty of fodder out there, plenty of interview time I've had with him over the years, you know, press conferences, walk and talks, what have you. But, you know, the book was basically born out of the 2019 Masters win. And this is the 5-year anniversary of that. But as I dove into it, I decided to expand it because Tiger coming back and winning that Masters was, you know, in my mind, as impressive of a feat as any of his major wins, because he wasn't the same Tiger. He was diminished. He had had a very, very serious back surgery that could have been career ending. That was really just meant to give him quality of life. He wasn't thinking about playing golf at a high level again. He was thinking about being able to get around and be pain-free. And the fact that he came back from that, you know, sort of shined the light on, and you know, what all went into that, I get into. I talk about, you know, the procedure and, you know, how he went to London to get consultation, and he, you know, how they decided on the doctor and what a spinal fusion is. But it just sort of highlighted he's had a career of resiliency, you know, hence the title Drive, you know, a never quit attitude. I mean, he made 142 straight cuts in a row at one point. 7 straight years he didn't miss a cut. Nobody's come within half of that. I mean, the record that he broke was 113 set by Byron Nelson in the 1940s. And the closest anybody had ever come to that was Jack Nicklaus of 105. In the 70s. So, I mean, it's just people don't get to 100 made cuts to 80 made cuts in a row, let alone 142. And, you know, the fact that the guy never quit, and there's just, you know, I've got a bunch of examples in the book. He shot 40 for his first 9 at Augusta and went on to win by 12. You know, he won a US Open with 2, you know, fractured bones in his leg. And obviously he's come back from that horrific car crash to make the cut at the Masters twice. So that's the book basically. And, you know, I think people who are around for it will be reminded of some things they might've forgotten about over the course of his career. And, you know, younger people who weren't there will be fascinated to learn just how great he is and was.
I can't wait to read it. It's released, within a week now or so.
March 26th, which is a couple of weeks away, 2 weeks before the Masters.
That great timing. I cannot wait to can't wait to read it, and also see you at the Masters so you can sign it for me. Hint, hint.
So that would be great. That would be great.
Absolutely. Now, do you think we'll see Tiger in Ponte Vedra? Probably.
You know what? He's got a couple days to commit. I'd be a little surprised if he doesn't. I'm kind of wondering what that would mean if he doesn't. He needs to play before the Masters.
Oh yeah,
right.
You know, and the Players Championship is a really, you know, that's a good spot for him. He'll have three full weeks after the Players before Masters week to recover and then ramp back up.
Sure.
So I think it makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense with what's going on in the world with the tour right now. You know, to play their flagship event. He hasn't committed so far, so we'll see.
Yeah, and with that course isn't that difficult. You know, we know that course well. It's not difficult to walk. And with his iron game and his 3-wood, he's not going to wear himself out as much as he would, say, at Bay Hill this week, in my opinion.
No question. I mean, the rough isn't the same. I mean, Bay Hill is a hard course for him at this point. You just don't want to be having to gouge it out of the rough. You know, there's virtually no rough at the Masters. So why not play, you know, Sawgrass, where it's not so much about the rough. It's about, you know, the ball running through the fairway and into the pine straw, you know, and keeping it in play. And it's a placement course. It's not the same as Augusta, but it's good for him. And obviously it's not so much a strenuous walk either. So I think there's a lot of good reasons for him to play next week and sort of hoping that he does, because I think it'd be good to see him and he kind of needs the reps.
I'm curious too, Bob, if I might ask this question. I know you got to get running, so we don't want to keep you too much longer, but is Tiger going down the road that he's going down, and we can talk about the injuries and everything that's happened in the last couple of years, and making a cut but not finishing tournaments, Riviera and other tournaments that he's been in, not being able to finish, being taken off in a cart, and all those things that are happening that we, I think, could quite easily say may continue to happen. With an analogy of Michael Jordan or other great athletes sticking around a little bit too long in any way, and golf has always been a game that you can play a lot longer than most sports, and I think a lot of people thought 15 years ago that Tiger could win a lot of majors because he can play well into his 50s and win like mm-hmm. Phil's done, win late where Jack did and other guys have done it. Now you see him not even quite 50 yet, and it's all broken down and his body is not what it used to be. Is there a point where he does maybe embarrass himself is not the right phrase, maybe a little too harsh, but does that occur to him? Does it occur to fans that it's not what we're really expecting to see when we watch Tiger and he can't quite compete like he used to?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, he's the most recent, you know, examples don't look good. I sort of want to give him the benefit of the doubt at Riviera because he was ill. At least that's what they said, and that's every indication was that he had the flu, and so that's different than bowing out with an injury. It's a shame that happened because he was going to be in there, you know, grinding to make the cut on that Friday. And it would have been good for him to try to hang in there and do that and get some rounds in. But, you know, the last time he had played before that was the Masters last year and he withdrew. Now he's had an ankle surgery since then. He played at the Hero, got better every day, said his ankle felt way better. He actually talked optimistically about playing once a month. I think this year, you know, kind of we need to see it play out a little bit. Tiger's still got the skills. There's no question about it. He can get it out there. He's still got the great iron game. If he can get his short game sharp, you know, he can be competitive. I'm not saying he's going to win. I certainly don't think that he'll be that competitive next week. But we've just not seen him put a body of work together that allows us to really judge properly. It's hard to compete against these guys when they're, you know, they're playing, they're, you know, they'll have played 4, 5, 6 tournaments, playing and practicing, and Tiger hasn't. You know, he's put himself at such a disadvantage. Then throw in the injuries and the age, and it's just almost impossible. But you know, I'm sort of like, I as long as he's got the skills, I sure would love to be able to see him give it a try. And I hate for him to not have that opportunity.
I think we all agree with that, 100%, to see him out there.
Yeah, but, we'll see.
And there's so much more I'd love to talk to you about, Bob. I wish we could get into it and have more time. But when we get together, maybe offline, maybe over a Coca-Cola or something stronger, we can talk about some of these things.
I told you.
Maybe a Glenlivet. I don't know. You know, our new sponsor.
Yeah, our new sponsor.
Good deal, well, Bob, guys. I appreciate you having me.
And thank you so much. And again, if people wanted to order the book online, is there a website or some way you could tell people to get to your book?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way is you can pre-order it at Amazon, at Barnes & Noble. It'll be available at all the places people buy books. But you can pre-order it now at any of those places online. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a must read, and we're all looking forward to it dropping on the 26th, I believe. But you can pre-order right now. So go do it, folks. Go do it.
All right, Bob. Have a good time there at Bay Hill, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks for your time.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks,
buddy. Take care.
See ya.
Take care. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bob Herrick, again, SI.com, and in his new book coming out, which we'll talk about, and we'll read it.
Absolutely.
And I'm sure it's got fascinating things in there because he's talking about one of the most fascinating sports characters in the last 50 years. So
I wanted to talk to him about AK and why there was so much of a media squash on Anthony Kim coming out and had just an abysmal, week.
He opened with, 76, 78?
Yeah, something like that. He was last in the field at the end of the tournament. But he hasn't played. I mean, it's been 12 years since he's been competitive.
Right. Why do you think there was a hush? Didn't hear much about him, or do you really think that somebody did, isolate him or not want him
getting
exposure?
I honestly think that his handlers said, we want to make this more about, just go out and play, not about what you've been doing. Have you been practicing? What questions can he answer and can't he answer based on the medical or insurance money that he'd been receiving all this time?
Right.
So that I'm sure his attorneys had something to talk to him about there too, I would think.
Yeah.
Be careful what you say.
Right.
I've been working out every day for the past 6 months. Okay. We want $2 million back right now,
Yeah. Well, tell people that though. People may not know that, Frank. That happened. Yeah, what happened 10 years ago?
Yeah, almost 12 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. What happened there? People that aren't clear about the insurance part of it.
Well, just an injury, and he had an insurance policy that if he got hurt and could not play, that it would pay out X number of dollars per year to him, and so he invoked it and quit playing. And if he came back, he'd lose all that money. So you take, and it's kind of like LIV Golf and PGA Tour. You take basically the no-cut event that he entered himself into, which is insurance money. I'll take the check.
But it came with a big hook.
But don't run to the mailbox. Use your wheelchair or walker to get to the mailbox because people film you. People take pictures. So we'll see. More will come out about that, and I'm going to talk to Bob about that at length too. That he has some insights.
Well, we appreciate all the time that he could give us, and he's there obviously working at Bay Hill. But a guy like that, you could talk to for 2 hours.
He and I do. We get to tournaments, and we'll sit there in the lunchroom or the player dining or media lunchroom, whatever, and just sit there and talk. He and Ron Green and a bunch of us just sit around, and it's fun for me. To be in that circle talking to those guys because those are the guys I've read for years and now they're colleagues. So it's a lot of fun to be out there in the middle of all that, like you are and you were when you were doing play-by-play on PGA Tour with all those guys. And we
cool.
can't wait for the Players' Championship. I will not be there this year. It's next week. But given everything that's going on here, I have to spend more time here right now trying to get my life back in order as far as how my home and two homes actually that I own got hit. So
and you're also not at the Colo Guard, which used to be one of your favorite.
I was always there. So this year has, I was looking forward to 2024 and starting out, the end of November, 1st of December, you and I were talking about, well, let's revamp this and do this and maybe do this show and boom, that life event occurred.
Things change
and it just slowed me down. But once we get to the Masters and beyond, I think we'll be pretty much at full throttle. everything will be running on its own. But looking forward to it, and looking forward to you know, seeing everybody again, being out there to see everybody. And I'm looking forward to maybe playing golf. I've been cleared by my foot doctor, so I'm going to go out this afternoon and maybe hop in a cart with a few wedges and maybe a 7-iron and a putter, and just kind of hack around with the boys, you know, let them play. Nice. I'll play as a fifth in my own cart, because it's cart path only, but I'll be able to drive out there.
Nice.
Yes.
Nice.
I'll have the handicap flag, you know.
Which you will keep for the rest of your life, I promise you.
I'll be updating that thing.
You will never, ever be 100% healed, is what you'll tell everybody. I still got a little something. I go, Frank, you've been driving that car for 20 years.
Yeah. My mother-in-law, God bless her soul, passed, but I still have her her handicap placard in my car. It's very useful at football games and during Christmas at the mall.
You know, I don't think you should be saying that, Frank.
It
seems like it's really taking a spot of somebody that needs it. But okay,
I don't do that. I'm joking. I don't do that.
I'm joking.
But I still
it's
have
a
it.
Joke. It's a joke. I'm
joking.
Why did I say
just
that?
Just kidding, joking. Mrs. Minerva.
Just kidding. God. All right. Well, we are about out of time. Before we go, I want to remind people of a couple things. One, that you need to check out Invited Clubs. Frank and I are both members of Invited Clubs, formerly Club Corp, now Invited Clubs, for the last couple of years. And you can be a member yourself and join with Frank and I, that you have a membership maybe in your local town, local area, but you also get privileges all over the country, over 200 clubs and private clubs, golf clubs and private clubs all over the United States. Go to invitedclubs.com to find out more. And they're constantly adding more clubs. And at the same time, what I'm proudest of is they're updating clubs constantly. And that's what's beautiful about it. They're not one of these places that, hey, we get a club and we don't even touch the bunkers or put in new greens or anything else for 30 years. They're constantly upgrading, putting money back into their clubs. So check them out, invitedclubs.com, as well as PXG, Frank.
Absolutely. Check out PXG. They are a wonderful company, wonderful people. Been in touch with them. They'll be they're having me go do the called the Black Ops Challenge or the Driver Challenge. If you haven't heard about that, go to pxg.com. Check it out, because their new driver, everything I've heard about it, I've not hit it yet. But I'll be doing that. In fact, one of the people that I deal with there in Scottsdale at PXG said, are you at Bay Hill? I want you to go to the trailer and let them fit you to that new driver real quick. They'll just build it for you right there. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. I like that. Treated like a tour pro. Take me out to the range with the pros, and I'll shank a few down the range and hit somebody with a driver. Yeah, but anyway, check out PXG, everybody. It is a wonderful company, wonderful product. I play PXG exclusively and love their stuff.
Nice. And Lexus as well, Frank. I got my new Lexus. Did you get your Lexus yet?
I did. I did.
Did you?
It is. It's gorgeous. The new Lexus convertible. I love it.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if it came in yet. Okay, good for you.
It's sitting right behind my new Mercedes convertible. Yeah.
Ow.
Oh.
Well, I wish.
And a G5. The old G5 used.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. Perfect.
Get us out of here.
All right. We're done. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We had a great show. Thank you to Bob Herrick. Again, check out Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods, his new book coming out in a couple of weeks about Tiger Woods, of course. In the meantime, for Frank Bassett, I'm Tim Matthews. Thanks for being with us. Remember to join us next time right here for Golf Talk America.